This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as we speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast, impressive swath of happenings, including, but not limited to,
the following.
A bunch of college students defend the purchase of a ridiculously expensive desk. A bear scares people in Washougal. And scientists discover a tube-nosed bat.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, arguably not that shocked, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is,
yikes,
Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely, incontrovertibly, everything you need to know for Friday, October 8th, 2010.
Irrefutably?
Irrefutably, ineffably.
Inexorably.
Exactly.
Indisputably.
All inestimably. Did we say that one already?
Undebatably.
I got nothing else.
Hella. Okay. Here's Dawn Taylor, ladies and gentlefolk, at the Legion of News news desk.
Portland police hope a $1,000 reward will spark tips in a hit-and-run crash that injured a wheelchair-bound woman.
$1,000?
1,000 whole dollars. American dollars.
That's almost certainly worth being scarred up by my neighbors for being a snitch.
Melinda Barnett, 62, was on her way home from a coffee shop on September 20th when she was struck by a car pulling out of a driveway in southeast Portland. The crash near the Tall Furs Mobile Home and RV Park on Southeast Division Street happened at 4:22 p.m. Barnett was heading west in the bike lane of Division Street. Now, wait a minute. She was in a wheelchair and she was in the bike lane on Division.
Well, yeah, I got nothing.
I'll bet it's one of those motorized Moby carts.
She was in a Rascal.
I hate those people
so
much.
Rascal she stole from Winco. I'm not saying she did that, of course. You just understand. It's just a supposition, and a humorous one at that, that's been exaggerated for comedic effect.
Yep, it does say the impact did not knock Barnett out of her electric wheelchair, but she suffered serious injuries to both of her legs, including a broken right leg. But then again, how would she know?
I feel like this is one of those things where I need a dry erase board. Like when they give you, like when you're in traffic court and you're trying to explain why it is that you slammed into a bus full of school children while trying to avoid a milk truck. So, first of all, this was Division and what?
156th.
Okay, Division 156th. So right by the, as all good things in Southeast Portland, it took place near the Victory Bingo. So, she's. She's in the, and I'm not kidding, by the way, the Victory Bingo, which is right next to a dollar store. And by the way, in the Victory Bingo, there are no actual victories of any kind. Not spiritually, not emotionally, not even really financially. No, there are no victories of any kind taking place there ever. So
this was also, as it says, near the Tall Furs Mobile Home and RV Park.
Yes. What is the difference between, well, never mind. So she's in She's in the bicycle lane, even though she is in a wheelchair or a wheelchair-like device that she may or may not have stolen from a Winco.
They're calling it an electric wheelchair.
Okay.
But I bet, and so it could have been, because sometimes you see those people in the electric wheelchairs and they have, like, the flags attached to them and, you know, streamers coming off the back and stuffed animals tied to them because they're trying to, like, you know, clever up their mobility device.
Yes. Yes, the crippled aren't allowed to be clever, ever. So she's in the bike lane. She's heading whatever direction that is. She's heading east. And then what is the nature of the collision? In other words, if somebody injured her legs, how is it? Did somebody drive into her in the oncoming lane?
There was a car pulling out of a driveway, and she was tootling down the street in the bike lane.
With Baby Elephant Walk playing in the background.
I'm sorry. And I know that I am being really, really intolerant and un-PC and uncool, but I'm sorry. Since Callahan died, there is not a single cool person in an electric wheelchair.
So,
I am just going to make that statement. I'm sorry. I'm just basing that on this one woman who shows up for movie screenings, who I loathe so much, I want to just beat her senseless every time I see her.
All right. We've obviously entered into some area of your psyche that I wasn't really... There was no sign indicating the off-ramp that led into this... rather interesting detour through your personal loathings and dislikes. Notwithstanding the presence of this entirely separate woman at a film screening who almost certainly bears no relation to the woman in the story who was hit by a car. So she's driving, so she's wheeling down the road in her wheelchair.
Right.
And so the theory is that a guy backed out of his driveway, didn't see that she was behind him.
He pulled out of a driveway, so I think he just pulled out onto the street and she was...
And then just turned right into the wheelchair woman.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So it didn't knock her out of the wheelchair, but she did suffer serious injuries and a broken leg. She told police that the driver told her he would follow her home, but then he drove off and never followed up.
Well, it probably became frustrating after a while, because how fast can she really go with the broken legs and all?
That's true.
Just to stop every now and again, just to sort of think how badly her day has gone.
You know, he could have, like, tethered her to the front bumper and driven her faster and gotten her there quicker.
That's Don Taylor suggesting that. Rick Emerson isn't suggesting anything of the kind.
The driver involved in the hit and run is described as an older, dark... is an older, dark American-made sedan. The driver was about 45 years old, white, and had medium-length dark hair. He may have been wearing glasses.
So the driver was not older, American-made, and dark?
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, he was. He's 45. Well, no, he was white, so he wasn't dark.
All right.
But anyway, if you know anything about this, there could be $1,000 in it for
you. If you know a rumpled-looking white man in Southeast Portland, by all means, you let the cops know about that, like ASAP. You're listening to Legion of News right here, PDX.FM. Don't forget the program is available via iTunes later on today, as well as an MP3 download from PDX.FM or LegionofNews.com. Also on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
The head of a New Mexico animal shelter stopped at a police station to explain a dog-napping mistake. And 15 dogs were seized from her car, according to police. Natalie Owings, director of the Heart and Soul Animal Sanctuary near Santa Fe, New Mexico, said there were 15 dogs in her vehicle on Thursday when she stopped at the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office to explain why an employee had taken a Yorkshire Terrier, September 28th, from outside the Bureau of Land Management offices on an apparently bogus tip that the animal was being abused. However, while Owings was explaining what she called this big mistake with the terrier, deputy seized 15 dogs from her truck that were suffering in the heat. According to Sheriff Greg Solano, the temperature in the vehicle was 111 degrees. At least one puppy is lethargic and being treated for a temperature of 107. The rest are doing well but need to cool down. She was cited with 15 counts of neglect or failure to care for an animal, which could carry fines of up to $50 per dog. Solano said more charges are possible in connection with the theft of the Yorkie, which was returned to its owner.
This is one of those things that I am so desperately afraid of, not even inadvertently committing, but just even the appearance that I'm the guy who would leave a car, you know, the dog in a car. So anytime there's, you know, the summertime, the weather is, you know, if the mercury gets above 65 degrees and I have to take the dogs anywhere,
It doesn't matter if there is absolutely zero danger of them, overheating while they're in the car. I will sprint in and sprint out, knocking people out of the way, just shoving things to the side so I can get back. Because I don't ever want to be the guy where, you don't want to get outside and then somebody's standing by the car going, your dog can barbecue inside this car in less than 2 minutes or whatever. I'm just, because it's such a hideous thing that you don't even want the appearance, that you are that guy.
Yeah, I just won't take Bella places when it's hot, just because, not even because I'm afraid anything will happen to her so much, but because, I don't want anyone to think that I'm the guy who leaves my dog in the hot car.
Because every time you see, it doesn't even matter what the temperature is, if you just see a dog in a car, it's like your default assumption is just that the person is horrible somehow. I was doing this yesterday, and I think it was, yesterday it was overcast. I mean, it was a steel gray sky. There was no danger of anybody suffering any kind of heat, anything, in any car, anywhere in Portland. But I had to stop at a Safeway on the way home, and there was some terrier barking away in the car. And I just sat there and stared at the dog for a while, with my eyes sort of narrowing in a judgmental fashion. And I thought, I'd never do that. I can't believe that this world is filled with such horrible people. And I just immediately switched into the full-on, screaming judgment mode for no readily apparent reason.
The people that make me really just screamingly angry are the ones who have their dogs in the back of pickup trucks and they're not leashed down. They're not tethered in.
It's a guy sort of wheeling around a corner at 80 miles an hour while a lab is in the back going, just sort of trying to hold on.
Yeah. I want to follow those people and then to wherever it is they're going and then just punch them in the face.
We had a guest who was in the studio yesterday after the program, somebody who came by to check out our plushly appointed studios. And it's a woman who works at a place where they do pet surgery, our good friend listener, Laura. And but she also does, they do pit bull rescue, she said. And I was asking him, from where do pit bulls need rescue? You don't really think of pit bulls as dogs that need a lot of help. It seems like that's a dog that can pretty much take care of itself. And she said that they almost all come from those idiot gutter punks downtown, who just sit there with a dog on the end of a piece of twine asking you for cigarette money. And every single time I see, one of those homeless kids with a dog, it's all I can do to not just pull the car over and just grab the dog and say, it's better off with me or, with anyone else. Goodbye now. Good day to you.
Yeah, there's a guy at the freeway exit by my house, and he has staked that out as his corner with his cardboard sign. And he has a pit bull. And this poor dog just has to lay there in the dirt all day, And there's a bowl of water for the dog. So at least, sometimes during the summer, it gets really hot. And then, you're a crazy man. You're a crazy homeless guy who's just asking for money from people on the freeway. But damn it, your dog is just laying here in the blazing hot sun. It's not his fault.
I saw this. We have to get off the subject or else put me in a bad mood. But it was, I think, maybe last year that I was downtown somewhere, and there was a homeless guy schlepping along, carrying all his junk as he does. And then he had just taken this dog. I mean, if it hadn't been so horrible, it would have been sort of amusing. He'd taken this dog that just had, this look on its face maybe next time around the karmic wheel will be more kind. Where the guy had basically put, one of those burro packs on the back of the dog, and the dog was just sort of walking along well, I guess this is my lot in life, and just, it's like carrying. And the guy had, put saddlebags on the dog, basically. And it was sort of equal parts humorous and awful. But, it's just like when you see some just a jackass mother on the bus, with her squalling infant. And you realize that, the law of averages is such that you could just put the kid anywhere in any other home. And, and he would be better off.
Sometimes, though, you see the dogs and they really like wearing those packs. You can tell that they're, doing a job and they feel proud of themselves.
Well, that's the thing is, the dogs enjoy, there have been actual, studies about this, that when dogs are, engaged in a service role, that they are actually happier. But it's like, you got to figure that no dog wants to just be with some filth-encrusted, stinking owner who reeks of feces. That's not a thing you can feel proud about when you're talking to your canine companions.
The thing is, though, about dogs is that dogs love you anyway, even if you are crazy and encrusted in filth.
I suppose. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
In the 15 years that Brian McKenzie lived along Southeast 320th Avenue in Washougal, Washington, a walk through his backyard has never been so frightening. Twice in the last two nights, a bear has stopped by McKenzie's home. Most recently, the bear got into a trash can and spread garbage around the yard. Before that, the bear damaged McKenzie's dog kennel. McKenzie said, pushed it into the driveway 6 feet. There are claw marks. McKenzie's neighbor took a picture of the bear before it destroyed the shed. McKenzie said, I'm concerned because once they get used to the easy food, they're around pretty often. It's not the bear's fault. They're starving. Officials at the Department of Fish and Wildlife suggest that if you live in an area where there are bears, you keep your garbage can secure, your food inside, and your grills clean to avoid encounters with bears.
Where is Washougal relative to here?
I have no idea.
Okay. So I have no way of knowing if this news actually pertains to me or has any bearing on my actual existence.
You're actually from Washington originally, so I thought maybe you would have a better idea. Than
is Washougal in Washington?
Yes, it is.
It's not in Oregon?
No, it's in Washington.
Okay. So
the state of your birth.
So it is, you know, but Washington and Oregon are just filled with it. First of all, it doesn't help matters that like half the cities in this part of the country are just spelled in some bizarre fashion that your brain sees them and immediately decides not to commit them to memory. Because you realize that it's like some just random conglomeration of letters, and so you just decide, you know, you realize right out of the gate you're not going to be able to remember how to spell it, and so you just don't worry about
Indians with their stupid names.
Forget it. Yeah. And you just move on. So.
Kamekida.
Here's Don Taylor.
I don't know what that means. Students at the University of Central Florida want to know why an $8,000 desk was purchased for the student government office. Student body president Mike Kilbride said the desk was purchased to better serve the students. But according to nightnews.com, a website that reports UCF news, student government staff members said nothing was wrong with the old desk. Reporter Logan Herlihy said the purchase is unfair to other student organizations. Kilbride sent an email to a local news station saying the front desk was purchased from a state-approved vendor under state contract pricing. Student government operates as a functioning office and has office expenses, furniture being one of them. It was an $8,000 desk.
Let me ask you this about, you just said Chemeketa or Kamekida,
yeah,
or whatever that is. What is that?
It might be a county.
I thought it was a school.
Well, there is. There's Kamekida Community College,
is
which
there a
is
font
down by Salem.
Called Kamekida? That's Helvetica.
Yeah.
All right. So there's not Helvetica. It's All right. This is one of those things that if you're stoned out there, that's undoubtedly highly amusing. And you can just repeat that later on the day if you find yourself in need of laughs. You can just say, Kamekida, Helvetica, Helvetica, Kamekida. And then say Buffon and Gazebo over and over and over again.
Uma, Oprah, Oprah, Uma.
All right. So when I see the word Kamekida, and is it Kamekida or is it Chemeketa?
Chemeketa. It's Kamekida.
Okay. Let's get a hold of ourselves for a second. Please dispel, Don Taylor.
C-H...
Am I distracting you from World of Warcraft over there?
Yes. I am. I'm playing Plants vs. Zombies.
If it's the run sheet, I've already got one made up over here.
No, it's not the run sheet.
I'm going to get it written down.
Right
here. Brain like a steel trap.
I'm way past giving a damn about the run sheet.
All right, then.
I'm actually still acquiring last-minute news because I want to be up to the minute and share things with the people.
Okay.
I believe it is C-H-E... Meketa.
And so it's the name of a city? You don't really know, do you?
I don't really know. I know that there's the community college down in the Salem area, and I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at pdx.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes as well as on your mobile device, whatever it is you might be carrying around in the palm of your hand. You can use that to receive this fine radio program wherever it is you might roam in this land of ours. That is mobile.pdx.fm. Mobile.pdx.fm. You know who knows how to put a language together? That's the Spanish, Don.
They know language.
They know how to use an assemblage of consonants and vowels to make something that you can speak almost instantly. It is no coincidence, Don Taylor, that Spanish was the basis language for Esperanto. Esperanto being the language that William Shatner used for his fantastic film.
The Esperanto movie.
I'm shocked. You don't know the name of William Shatner's Esperanto film.
I don't remember what it was.
I want to say Incubus. Was it?
Yes, it was
the Incubus, I believe, was the name.
I think it was just Incubus.
Now, have you seen Shatner's Esperanto film?
I watched a little bit of it, but it's in Esperanto, so I lost interest fairly quickly.
I guess it's a fair point, I guess, if you're not really watching it. Is it subtitled? Is it available now? Could I rent it?
I think it might be available subtitled.
Is the Incubus a Shakespeare play?
No.
I'm thinking of something else. I'm thinking of The Tempest.
Yes, you are.
What is the nature of the Shatner Esperanto film?
I don't remember. I know what an incubus is, but I don't remember what the actual. I remember just trying to watch some of the Shatner Esperanto movie, and after about like 5 or 10 minutes of William Shatner overacting
in another language,
in a nonsense language. There was like, there, I just couldn't continue.
Wouldn't you give anything though just to have seen him and Ricardo Montalban sort of giving you know like in Esperanto, just sort of issuing you know, escalating challenges to one another?
Yeah.
Now, an incubus is a male demon that sodomizes you, right? I mean, not you personally.
No, it's
unless you're really showing off your ankles and acting haughty.
It seduces you and then steals your soul.
No, it seduces you. It's not a forcible sort of a thing.
No, it seduces you.
All right, I was under the impression that it was more of an involuntary violation.
Well, it's involuntary in that it kind of mesmerizes you and seduces you. I mean, it has.
It's a kind of demonic Barry White.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It has the supernatural ability to seduce you, and then it steals your life essence. The female version, of course, being the succubus.
All right, then. You know, moments ago we were talking about something that was going to lead into to Castalia Language Center. And
and Spanish is a romance language.
That's right.
So there we go. It kind of fits.
Okay. Well, in any event, if you would like to... I have no idea how I was going to get back to Spanish classes from this, you know, because then we got into Esperanto and Ricardo Montalban and sodomy. Rick Emerson regrets all of this. The preceding 3 minutes in toto are regretted by me.
I don't know why you insist on bringing up sodomy as often as you do.
Well, because it's fun, Don. You know, both, you know, I'm just... You know,
is it, Rick? Is it fun?
I am what I am. One can't deny one's own hobbies. Castalia Language Center is based in downtown Portland. They are a Spanish language class and learning center for adults, which means that you're going to be there with folks just like yourself. And when I say folks just like yourself, I mean people who are past what the Catholic Church would call the age of reason, which is when your brain just sort of shifts and morphs and starts to learn things a little differently. Because you get to be about, I don't know, like maybe 12, 13, 14 years of age, and your brain basically figures if it hasn't learned a second language by that point, it's probably not going to. And it's all the sections of your brain that would normally be absorbing a second or third language, they just go into just kind of a hibernation mode, which is why when you are an adult and you're trying to learn a second or third language, it takes a little bit longer than it would when you're a kid. You know, kids can just absorb all kinds of different tongues as though they were sponges. You get to be a little older, it takes a little bit longer. So here's what you do. You go to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Gremmel, who is the owner and operator of that school, is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, and she actually specializes in helping adults learn Spanish, whether or not they have any actual background in it or not. So if you're an advanced Spanish speaker, great, they can help you polish the skills you've already got. If you're an intermediate Spanish speaker, or if you are just, you know, kind of getting your linguistic feet damp, she can help you with that as well. And no matter what day of the week is best for you, no matter what time of day, they have something that works with your schedule as well. They're proud sponsors of Legion of News right here, PDX.fm. So please tell me you heard it here, won't you? PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A 4-year-old Shih Tzu named Buddy disappeared from his Mississippi home, then several weeks later showed up hundreds of miles away in St. Louis, Missouri. How he got to St. Louis is a mystery. A resident just discovered the dog in her front yard one day. It turns out relatives of the dog's owner didn't live too far away. But he's now in the care of Sherry Curry Alexander of Blackjack, Missouri. I don't think it's the same Sherry Curry.
Probably not.
But he was living with Sherry's stepsister's mother in Greenville, Mississippi. Her name is Lily Shanklin, but she's known as Mama Lily. I don't know why that's pertinent to the story, but that's what this is. Lily's family gave Buddy to her after she had open-heart surgery. They were best friends until Buddy got out on September 4th and disappeared. Nobody had seen her until this past Friday when Brenda Robinson found Buddy in her front yard in Delwood, Missouri.
Here's the thing. I don't care about this story in even the slightest way, but I will tell you this. It prompts me to tell you about Bobby the Wonder Dog.
Oh, okay.
And when you say, who is Bobby the Wonder Dog? I say, you already know Bobby the Wonder Dog under a different name. It is the dog that I referred to as Speckles, sort of as an like a kind of a placeholder name. Bobby the Wonder Dog is the dog that... wandered, that found its way to Silverton, Oregon, from Indiana. And I was referring to the other day, I was talking about how these murals that are all throughout Silverton where they show the dog that I was referring to. And I think I'm saying Speckles because I think Speckles is the dog from that Casey Kasem thing where he goes crazy. I'm trying to do a long-distance dedication about a dog. Where are my photos? I think that's the name of the dog in the story. But somebody actually sent me Bobby the Wonder Dog has his own Wikipedia entry.
Oh.
And if you go to Wikipedia, it is just Bobby, B-O-B-B-I-E. Silverton Bobby, also known as Bobby the Wonder Dog, was a dog from the U.S. state of Oregon who became famous for traveling 2,800 miles to return to his owners in the city of Silverton. So, just in case anybody
and
heard,
and they have a big old parade for him and stuff every year.
I don't know.
Year,
I don't know that it's it's a thing that they have throughout the city. I mean, it's like there's murals, there's a statue of Bobby the Wonder Dog, there's a like 5x life replica of Bobby the Wonder Dog's doghouse that is right there on the sort of main city street that goes right through Silverton. Upon his death in 1927, he was buried with honors at the Oregon Humane Society's Pet Cemetery, and a week later, Don Taylor.
Yeah.
Rin Tin Tin laid a wreath at his grave.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not even making that up. So there you go. And I'm only mentioning that because I think it was on this show that we brought that up a couple of days ago.
Wow.
All right. You were listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. This is Don Taylor.
Could you hand me the piece of paper that is on the printer there behind you, Mr. Emerson, sir?
Well, I suppose, but only because you called me sir. Yeah. All right.
There you go.
Thank you very
Fantastic.
Much.
Fantastic. Here is Don Taylor, kids.
In another pre-election departure for the White House, President Barack Obama announced Friday that his National Security Advisor, General James Jones, is stepping down and will be replaced by Deputy Tom Donilon. President Obama praised General Jones's service in a press briefing in the Rose Garden, saying the former Marine had been a steady voice on security policy and has helped his administration reset its foreign policy abroad.
Serving as National Security Advisor.
Listen to this. This is so great. I mean, like the first syllable out of his mouth, you can just hear an exasperated sort of, some other guy leaving me. Jesus Christ. Hold on. Where's our, he's resigning and, you know, he served his country with honor and we'll always remember him fondly speech. All right, just cross out the last guy's name, but James Jones. All right, hold on. Here we go.
Serving as National Security Advisor is one of the most difficult jobs in our government. But through it all, Jim, like the Marine he has always been, has been a dedicated public servant and a friend to me.
You just hear his sort of exhausted irritation in every syllable that comes out of the guy's mouth. And you know what else is difficult is trying to run a goddamn government when everybody turns and runs at the first sign of difficulty, you sons of bitches.
General Jones's departure is the latest in a string of high-profile personnel shakeups only weeks before the midterm elections. Obama made the announcement today at the White House.
I'm announcing that Jim has decided to step aside as National Security Advisor later this month, and that he will be succeeded by his very capable deputy, Tom Donilon.
So that's sort of code for they're not going to hire anybody else for that job. They're just going to have Tom step up and do more. They won't be replacing that position.
Well, you know, in this economy, that's what you do. At the White House, they have to.
They're doing more with less, Don.
They have to watch their budget. They have to cut a few corners, and really, if you can have just one guy do the work of two people, without having to pay him any extra. The president said General Jones told him when he took the job that he would like to serve for about 2 years. But the American people owe Jim an unbelievable debt of gratitude, he said. A 40-year military veteran, General Jones, maintained a lower profile than Mr. Obama's other advisors. His resignation comes soon after the release of Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward's book on Mr. Obama's war policies, which seemed to show a disconnect between General Jones and Mr. Obama and other advisors over the course of the Afghanistan war.
Do you ever wonder about people named, like, Jim Jones and whether or not the parents sat and had some discussion about, you know, like, maybe it's a family name or a name that they... You know, it was a name that they picked because it was a tribute to, you know, a grandfather or something, or, you know, they just particularly liked the name. And if they had any sort of discussion about whether they want to name their kid after, you know, the Guyana suicide, you know, dude.
Yeah, I'm sure that he's probably older.
Yeah, but
than
you meet
that,
people.
But yeah, today now. You
What's
kind
like
of
Cameron wonder. Crowe's dad? You know, Cameron Crowe's name is Jim Crow. And you got to ask yourself, like, really, why? Why would you name someone Jim Crow? I mean, especially when, you know, you got to, you know, James, you know, Cameron Crowe's talked about, you know, his, you know, how he's a very progressive person politically and how he got that from his parents, who in turn got it from their parents. So it's not like they were somehow unaware of the negative connotations of naming their kid Jim Crow. It seems like there's skillions of names in the world. Probably something else you could have gone with.
There's a documentary I just watched recently about Monty Python. It's a fairly new documentary that they interviewed the 5 surviving members going through the whole history and also their personal backgrounds. And John Cleese, his family name is Cheese. and his father changed the name to Cleese, which apparently John Cleese and his mother and father were like the only Cleeses anywhere ever, because it's not actually a proper name.
Because it's just made up.
Yeah, it's just made up. And he said he never knew why his father specifically decided to be the one in the family to do that. And he said at one time he actually considered changing it back, because he does have friends who call him Jack. And he thinks that Jack Cheese would be a great name for a comedian.
That's fantastic. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
And speaking of President Barack Obama.
Who?
President Barack Obama.
Okay.
That'd be President Obama to you.
All right.
He signed legislation today designed to expand access to television, the internet, and various other telecommunications technologies for Americans with disabilities. The 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act is designed, among other things, to update closed captioning and video description services. It's also meant to improve the dissemination of emergency information to people with disabilities in the event of a crisis. The law is about equal access, equal opportunity, and equal respect for every American, President Obama said at the White House. Each of us has a role to play in our economy and contribute to the American story.
What does this law actually do?
It expands access to television,
right.
Theater. I don't.
Yeah, but I mean, what does it actually do?
Well, some of it will, I think, provide funds and resources to update closed captioning and video stuff, which is sorely out of date. If you ever mute your TV and see the closed captioning on most television shows, it's
slipshod.
Yeah, it's not very good. And then,
Which doesn't make any sense when you think about it, because there must be somebody. It's got to just be somebody captioning that on the fly. They probably just have a person sitting there transcribing it, I would imagine. That's probably how that works,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, in some cases. But in some cases, honestly, it seems like it's packaged with the program. It ought to be packaged with the program. I mean, if it's a network television program and it's going to have, they know in advance it's going to have closed captioning, surely they could have someone type up the captions before they broadcast it.
Well, I mean, with a pre-recorded program, yes, if you're watching like CSI or something,
yeah.
I mean, that's closed caption, I think, by the production company.
Yeah, and I don't blame them when there are mistakes and problems when you're watching, like, say, the local news.
Yeah, but that's like, I remember watching a presidential debate, and there was somebody, you know, we had the closed caption, we were doing a thing for it, and the closed captioning was on, and it was just, and it seems like it can't be that difficult to do, though.
You have to type really fast and be able to listen and write and be, like, one step behind.
But it seems like they ought to just, that's what they get. They should get one of those court reporter chicks for it, though, that does the, like, the little weird keyboard that only has, like, five buttons on it or something. And that'd be really, which is just, that's a thing that I find fascinating, by the way. The little shorthand keyboard deal that they use for court transcriptions.
Yeah.
That's a whole thing. That's one of those devices that I want to see, I want to see them, deal with on one of those, like, Discovery-type programs. Except I have no idea what program. I don't know what program it would be that would actually sort of analyze or to discuss it or show how it works, but I just find it just utterly fascinating. And everybody does, because if you mention it to somebody, everybody, their eyes, they do what you just did. Their eyes kind of light up and they go, I've never seen a typewriter that is so fascinating to people as the one.
The dictation machine, it's buttons and it.
But it's like combinations of the same five buttons used over and over again. That's kind of the. And then there's like a foot pedal thing with it, too. It's like you're playing a Hammond organ slash sewing machine slash, like strange theremin type box or something.
Like those machines that the Scientologists use to get clear.
Yes. I need you to hold these paint cans. Now give me your wallet. Thank you. So there's that. So there's the two typewriters which I find fascinating are that, and then I've discussed this ad infinitum, and people are undoubtedly sick of hearing me talk about it, but for the longest time I've been fascinated by the idea of, like, a Chinese typewriter, because, you know, they just got, like, an individual character for everything. And so I was just obsessed for years with trying to get a picture of, like, what a typewriter would look like in China.
Yeah, and hardest job ever, Chinese court reporter.
Yes. Hold on a second. Let me walk to the other side of the building where the O letter is put. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Science on the March, right here on Friday at pdx.fm.
A tube-nosed fruit bat with an appearance reminiscent of the Star Wars Jedi Master Yoda has been discovered in a remote rainforest. The bat, along with an orange spider and a yellow-spotted frog, are among a host of new species found in the region, a region of Papua New Guinea. More than 200 animals and plants were revealed for the first time after 2 months of surveying in the rugged and little explored Nakanai and Muller mountain ranges last year. The findings include 2 mammals, 24 species of frogs, 9 plants, and nearly 100 new insects, including damselflies, crickets, and ants, and around 100 new species of spiders. There is a white-tipped tail mouse, at least one ant, and several of the crickets, or katydids, are so different from other known species that they each represent an entirely new genus. Think about that a moment, Rick Emerson.
I'm thinking about it right now.
They were uncovered by 2 scientific teams coordinated by Conservation International's Rapid Assessment Program in partnership with Papua New Guinea's Institute for Biological Research and Conservation Organization. If you go, by the way, to rickemerson.com/pictures, you will find an area where we put photographs of things occasionally. And in our visual aids for today, there is a picture of the tube-nosed fruit bat.
Hold on. Let me look it up right now.
And he does look a little bit like Yoda, but the freaky part about it is his tube nose. He does indeed have a tube nose. The teams explored different altitudes of the forest-cloaked Nakanai Mountains, which host cave systems and some of the world's largest underground rivers, and the Muller Range, assessing the remote areas by plane, dinghy, on foot, and even by helicopter.
This is like, I was reading some story the other day about, it was in Peru, I think, where they found some cave system that... It was one of those things where the cave had, there'd been some, you know, like a rock slide or, you know, been a cave-in, actually, you know, had happened where it blocked the front of it. And so this entire cave system had remained intact inside, but it had been cut off from the outside world, and it became, you know, totally a self-enclosed system. And there was a sort of a hot springs that bubbled up inside, so life was able to continue to exist and evolve, but it became its entirely own self-contained ecosystem. Anyway, so then just a few years back, researchers finally, you know, they were blasting away a rock wall, and they just discovered, hey, behind this rock wall is this entire maze of caves that have been isolated from the outside world for like 9 jillion years. And they found it's the sort of thing that is both fascinating and horrifying all at once, where they just found this entire miniature ecosystem of like insects and spiders and whatever that were all like, they were all like blind and albino and they were colorless and, you know, but it like just developed their entire, you know, their own like a little world and community in there. And they had just a photo gallery of like 85 different new species of spiders. Which
and
is like
they broke open the wall to their cave, and now they're all dead.
Yeah, and it's like, and I have no idea why of all of the things the universe seems to feel like that it needs to spring on us, it's got to be spiders, you know?
Yeah, we don't need any new spiders.
No, I mean, why can't it be just like an exciting new variety of cow that we could then kill and put on bread? No, it's got to be millipedes.
There was a beautiful yellow-spotted frog found only high up in the mountains. A tiny frog that's only 2 centimeters, which calls for a mate in the afternoon, unlike most frogs in the area, which call at night.
Okay, then.
There you go. Can you see the fruit bat?
No, I'm looking here. Zid, you,
Well, I mailed it to the thing.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll check into it later.
Women need to work much harder than men to build up a sweat when exercising, Japanese researchers say. Scientists at Osaka International University and Kobe University discovered that men on average start perspiring much more quickly than women, and then twice as much when they're in the middle of exercising. Men are more efficient at sweating, meaning that their bodies are working more effectively, while women required a much higher body temperature before they started losing moisture. One researcher said there may be an evolutionary reason why men and women have evolved to sweat differently. Women generally have less body fluid than men and may become dehydrated more easily, said the study coordinator. Therefore, the lower sweat loss in women may be an adaptation strategy that attaches importance to survival in the hot environment, while the higher sweat rate in men may be a strategy for greater efficiency of action or labor.
And women don't sweat, Dawn. They glisten.
I sweat. I am...
I was trying to preserve your femininity just now.
I am not like the people in that study, apparently. No, I have always been somebody who just sweats easily and a lot. Matt Hammer, when I was in the 5th grade... By the way, isn't that a great name? Matt Hammer.
I was going to say, was he a private detective / porn star?
Matt Hammer was one of the kids in my 5th grade class, and he
complained. Did he make fun of you?
He made fun of me because I had sweaty hands when we were doing... We were doing square dancing in the 5th grade. And so, you know, it's not just because, like, I'm a fat chick. I was a fifth grader, and even then, sweaty hands.
I was just trying to picture you engaging in square dancing. Was this like a sort of like a Heaven's Gate kind of a thing, where you were roller skating your way to a barn raising somewhere?
Didn't they do that to you when you were in elementary school? Like, well, it's the weather's bad, so we're all going to go into the auditorium and square dance.
I think so. I just remember being in the gym in PE class, which is just like a horrifying thing to foist on the children anyway. Because it's always just a thinly veiled excuse to play dodgeball, which means you're going to be whacked in the face by something over and over again during the day. But I remember them sending us off to gym class, and they decided that the exciting way that we were going to get our cardio that day is that we were going to teach us, you know, they were going to teach us the jitterbug. I swear to Christ. But they thought that they were being, and this is the sort of thing that you look back and you don't know whether it's great or whether it's pathetic. But their whole strategy for getting us interested in learning the jitterbug, which really is like a thing you'll never use. As much as we talk about how, you know, school is full of skills that you're never going to find a need for in your real life, when have you ever been asked to do the jitterbug or, like, the Charleston or the Lindy Hop? The answer, never. Never, ever, ever.
Well, keep in mind, I was a drama geek. So, you know, I remember,
yeah, but even
I remember
so.
Doing some swing dancing at a party.
I suppose. Well, so you have to live while you had to live while you could before the Nazis came to take you away.
That's true. In my day, Rick, that was how we danced.
I remember them teaching us the jitterbug at the gymnasium, and one of the teachers having the idea that they would do it by using the Wham song "Wake Me Up Before You Go Go," because he says the word jitterbug at the beginning, and so therefore it was like a natural.
So
that's a horrifying, that's a thing I'll never be able to wash out of my head. You know, and of course, you know, and you're like 13 or something, and you're just gangly, and you know what the hell you're doing, and you know, and they're putting you in the proximity of girls, and so that becomes awkward anyway. And then I'm jitterbugging to Wham, and it just sounds retarded even to say it out loud. I mean, it just sounds like an exercise in absurdity, and it was, by the way.
Yeah, I was one of those young gals that, you know, you get to that age and people are saying, well, let's go out to a club, let's go dancing, and I don't dance. Why? And it's not because I don't like to dance, and it's not like because I wasn't any good at it.
Like the dancing gene.
It's because I would start dancing, and it would almost immediately look like someone had dumped a bucket of water on my head.
And they needed to put a stick under your tongue so you wouldn't chew it off.
So it was not attractive. It was not a good look.
Awesome. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. We honestly don't understand it ourselves. We want to welcome a brand new business partner that is Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. They're a fully licensed, insured, bonded contractor. They deal with electricity. Don Taylor, what should you do if your kite winds its way around a power line?
Duck and cover.
All right, I like your spunk, but I realized about halfway through that sentence you didn't know what I was talking about there. That is from there's this PSA they used to run constantly here in the Northwest, and it was a guy whose name I used to know, and it just escaped me now, but I think he was like a local weather guy. He was just like one of those, you know, like one of those, kind of those Jeff Gianola guys that you just see on television all the time. But they had him dressed up in this giant foam kite outfit, kind of like one of the guys that you see now, like outside a check cashing place, or like maybe in front of an insurance company that's standing on the sidewalk holding a sign, or you know, like in front of the oil changing place, and he's dressed like a big hot dog.
The guy in the mattress suit outside the Bed Mart.
Exactly, it was like a mascot costume, but it was a big kite, and he was one of the local weather guys, and he had this whole public service commercial that he filmed for the television with a young girl, and it was all about staying away from electricity because it was all dangerous, and because it'd blow your legs off if you went and you grabbed a hold of your kite once it had wrapped itself around the line. Anyway, so I have no larger point here except to say that that is a thing that they've drilled into our heads since, I mean, we were old enough to be watching the television, which is screw around with electricity, things are going to go bad. Now, it may not always go poorly for you in a physical sense. It may not even endanger you, physically. It may just be a thing where it takes up more of your time and more of your money than you wish to exert. So if you have an electrical problem or issue that needs dealing with in your house, if things just stop working, or if you need things expanded, maybe you're adding another room onto your house, you're remodeling, maybe you're going to be sort of revamping everything because you got one of those houses that was built like 145 years ago and you've decided to bring it into at least the late 20th century.
Maybe there's a poltergeist in your TV.
Perhaps, yes, sure, that. You go to SquiresElectric.com or you contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They give you free estimates so you know kind of up front exactly what it's going to cost. You can get a good sense for what the financial outlay is going to be. There's no job too big, no job too small. So they have done everything from a single light socket all the way up to full buildings. And, you know, and the way that, you know, Joe Squires described it to me is that he actually did this several years ago where a guy called him out to his house to do one power outlet. And then, you know, the guy expanded his house. He put in like a guest room or something the next year, and he came out and needed like four power outlets. And then just earlier this year, they did an entire condominium for the guy. You know, there's a whole building full of electrical wiring. So whether it's Ethernet wiring, office intercoms, wiring in your house, in your business, they can handle all of that. They'll do it right, and they'll do it right the first time. It's 503-252-1609. What about frogs, Don Taylor?
They'll explode if you plug them into a light socket.
Sure. SquiresElectric.com.
Why did you say what about frogs?
Never mind.
I don't know.
It's a whole thing. Don't worry about
it. I'm not from these parts.
That's fine.
I don't know your ways.
What kind of name is Taylor anyway? That wouldn't be Taylor Berg, would it? All right. Here's, are we still in science?
We are. And speaking of electricity, Rick Emerson, had you waited just a little bit longer, this could have been the segue. But
I say it's my fault.
No, you didn't know. You had no idea. A tiny electrical shock administered to certain parts of the brain can improve memory recall, U.S. researchers say. A study at Temple University in Philadelphia found the treatment stimulates certain neurons in the brain, so when a person tries to remember a name, they suddenly start working. The findings could lead to treatments for stroke victims and others who suffer memory loss from ailments or from old age. We know a lot about how to make a person's memory worse, said Ingrid Olson, a psychologist who led the study, but we don't know very much about how to make people's memory get better. Researchers said the amount of current needed was a fraction used in controversial electric shock treatment on mentally ill patients. In the study, a current 1 to 2 milliamps was delivered via electrodes on the scalp of volunteers to stimulate the anterior temporal lobes of the brain, which deal with the memory of proper names.
Do you ever wonder who volunteers for these kind of things where they just, you know, they're going to hook you up the jumper cables and they just say, you know, and it'll pay $4.95 and there's a lunch attached to it as well. The guy says, yes, me.
College students who want money for beer.
Do they really pay you to do medical experiments these days? I thought that was a thing that they longer paid for.
Psychological experiments and medical experiments, right. Yeah, and drug therapies and stuff. Recognizing a face but being unable to recall a name is a common phenomenon for almost everyone, but worse for those suffering neurological disorders. The study found the electrical stimulation increased memory by 11%, but only for up to an hour after the treatment was given. So there you go. And that is our science news.
That is Science on the March for Friday right here at Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A Skyview High School teacher and coach has been arrested on suspicion of sexual misconduct, making him the second school teacher or volunteer in a week to be arrested after allegations of inappropriate sexual conduct with a student. The Clark County Sheriff's Office said Nathan Botnan, 33, of Vancouver, had an inappropriate sexual relationship with a 17-year-old student during the 2007-2008 school year. Detective said Botnan admitted to having sexual contact with the student several times, and he was arrested on 30 counts of sexual misconduct with a minor in the first degree. Botnan is a full-time teacher and a coach at Skyview, according to the Sheriff's Office. On Wednesday, Skyview band volunteer Adrian Kelly, 23, was arrested after being suspected of having sexual contact with two 16-year-old female students in the past year.
Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. Joining us today is Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio. Tomorrow is Sarah Dillon's 30th birthday, so she will be in the studio later on today. We'll be counting down the top five. These will be the top five songs that Sarah Dillon's parents could have been having sexual relations to when she was conceived. That'll be coming up later on this afternoon, and I'm not kidding. So that'll be the top five songs that Sarah X. Dillon's parents may have been hugging each other in a special way to the accompaniment of the moment of her conception. So you can all think about the awkwardness and horror that will be unfolding later on. So that'll be today, as well as Stupid Criminal of the Week. Yes. This is Don Taylor.
A 22-year-old man was killed Thursday morning when he was hit by a hearse that was being driven by a friend in Macomb Township, Michigan. Sheriff Mark Hackle said Samuel York ran into the path of a 1999 Chevrolet hearse as it drove by the hometown mobile home park just before 3 a.m. He was pronounced dead at Mount Clemens Regional Medical Center. Hackle said the hearse was being driven by a 20-year-old friend of York's who had just dropped him off after a party. York's friends told the sheriff's office that York had been suffering from depression.
So, all right, so they go to... Everything should stop for a second. They go to a party in a hearse.
Yes.
The friend, they leave the party. The friend takes him home, drops him off, and then...
runs him over.
Runs him over. I'm sorry, I'm not laughing. I suppose I am laughing at that. But I'm just trying to figure out exactly how... I mean, does it explain how it is that that happened? Presumably, if you drop the guy off, he's only like a foot away from you. I mean, unless it was one of those things where, like, when you like people will get off from behind the bus and then they'll walk out the wrong way or something. Mm. Is there any explanation as to how this actually happened?
No, that was all I know. Just Andy was depressed, so who knows? Maybe.
I mean, I guess
he ran all the way around to the mobile park and came out the other side and then leapt in front of. I don't know.
I mean, I guess you get points for efficiency if you're just sort of compressing everything down so you can just be hit by the... It's like being hit by the ambulance, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, fair enough. Here's Don Taylor.
A sea lion that was found shot on the Sacramento River will undergo plastic surgery to repair its muzzle. The animal, known as Sergeant Nevis, was set for surgery Friday morning at Six Flags Discovery Kingdom. Marine mammal veterinarians, along with a doctor who does plastic surgery on human patients, will carry out the procedure. The sea lion was rescued and rehabilitated by the Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito. Experts said the serious nature of the animal's injuries prevented its release to the wild. Larry Allen Leggins of Sacramento County is accused of shooting Sergeant Nevis in the head last October. Authorities said it appears the animal was eating the fish Leggins was trying to catch. Leggins is set to face trial later this month. Delaware Republican Senate nominee Christine O'Donnell has answered certain questions for the first time since the morning after the primary.
I'm not a witch.
She was asked about some comments she made to a gun rights group that she would make sure the UN doesn't supersede the right of U.S. citizens to own guns.
The UN right now is considering some massive reforms, massive policies that will severely restrict our Second Amendment right. When I go to Washington, D.C., whether it's on the Second Amendment or any other issue, I will fight to make sure that we don't continue to cede more of our sovereignty over to the United Nations.
It almost sounds like she's not reading that off a piece of paper. Well done, Christine O'Donnell. I so desperately hope that she gets elected. We really ought to be on the Emerson Show. We really ought to be rolling out an O'Donnell watch. I mean, I think it absolutely...
Yeah.
It really does cry out for that.
Yeah, because she's just a huge train wreck waiting to happen.
Do you get the feeling that her entire platform is just made up of things that have been forwarded to her by relatives?
Email?
Yeah, with just like a lot of like forward and like, you know, and greater than signs before all the email content.
Yeah, it's stuff that Glenn Beck said filtered through like an uncle and a cousin like three times.
An entire campaign that ought to be underwritten by Snopes.
O'Donnell says one of her priorities as a senator would be to help repeal the president's health care law.
Scrap the bill and start over with real reform.
This is really, by the way, this is the way to the heart of Americans, is to say that you're going to get rid of health care if elected. I mean, you've got to give her points for chutzpah.
Start over with real reform, piece by piece. Nobody's disputing that we need health care reform, but this bill is a massive government takeover of the health care system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
you're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. This is Don Taylor.
U.S. President Barack Obama vetoed a bill today that would have made it easier for banks to foreclose properties across state lines. Obama said the Interstate Recognition of Notarizations Act of 2010 would have a possible unintended impact on consumer protections. He called on Congress to revise the measure before sending it back to him. The authors of this bill no doubt had the best intentions in mind when trying to remove impediments to interstate commerce, Obama said in his memo to Congress. My administration will work with them and other leaders in Congress to explore the best ways to achieve this goal. Coinciding with Obama's action, Bank of America today expanded its freeze on foreclosures in 23 states to cover the remaining 27 because of problems with paperwork. Several other banks have also halted at least some foreclosures. So, that happened. Let's do a little entertainment news, shall
Fantastic.
We, before we leave.
How you doing over there?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm dandy. I like your nail polish today, by the way. It's got a pleasing sort of, it's got a pleasing kind of mint color to it.
It's green and it's glitter.
Yeah.
It's actual glitter.
No, I'm a big fan. I'm having just a little bit of an audio freeze here for some moment. I will say that our entertainment news that is coming up right now is brought to you by The Cleaning Solution. You can contact them at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. The Cleaning Solution does cleaning for your home, your office, business, residence. residential for your carpet, tile, walkway, stone, marble, anything your feet might touch. 971-533-3211. So while I will remedy this here in just a moment, but let's plunge on into your entertainment news.
All right. Getting a little music there for the entertainment news?
No, hence my statement a moment ago about
the remedying audio. Something. Okay, all right.
Remedy means to fix.
Yeah, well, you could hum.
I'm not going to hum.
Okay. Caitlin Sanchez, the actress who loaned her voice to the title character of the U.S. animated series Dora the Explorer, is suing Nickelodeon. A lawsuit filed in New York Wednesday claimed Sanchez, 14, and her parents were pressured into signing contracts that they didn't understand and were cheated out of millions of dollars since she took over the voice role in 2007. I've never seen as convoluted and inscrutable a contract as I've seen here, said Sanchez's lawyer, John Ballesterer. Ballesterer said in a lawsuit, Nickelodeon and parent company Viacom failed to pay Sanchez for hundreds of hours of recording sessions. He also alleged the child was forced to promote the kids' show all over the country for a meager travel stipend of $40 a day. Michael Frickless, executive vice president and general counsel for Viacom, told the Daily News that the lawsuit is completely without merit. A Nickelodeon publicist told People.com that Sanchez is no longer playing the preschool-aged Dora because her voice has recently changed. Juliette Lewis's publicist says the actress and musician is okay and resting at home after her car was struck by a hit-and-run driver in Burbank. People.com said Lewis, 37, was in a chauffeured Lincoln Town car and was leaving an event for her new movie Conviction when the vehicle was struck Wednesday night. The sedan Juliet was traveling in was completely totaled, her representative said. Ms. Lewis is a bit banged up and sore, but otherwise, thankfully, okay, and is resting at home. That was kind of it for the entertainment news, because you never
fantastic.
You never forwarded me that other stuff. So
I forwarded to you. I'm looking at it right here. It's in my outbox. It's right there. It says to Don Taylor.
Okay.
Is there another Don Taylor? Have you been replaced by a pod Don Taylor?
I was replaced by someone younger because Nickelodeon decided that my
voice
was too
changed.
Old.
Fantastic. There's your entertainment news for Friday right here at Legion of News on PDX.FM. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock. I'm looking at a text message here about Dora the Explorer that I was going to read out loud, but it's...
Is it naughty?
It's probably the sort of thing that I don't... it's probably the sort of image I don't want to put in anybody's head. The Rick Emerson Show comes up 1 o'clock. We'll be talking to Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler in honor of Sarah's 30th birthday, which happens tomorrow. Also, Stupid Criminal of the Week. Here is Don Taylor.
Rick Sanchez of CNN didn't mince any words. He said he was wrong and he screwed up. He was interviewed on ABC's Good Morning America a week after being fired from his hosting job at CNN. Sanchez apologized for his slams at CNN and at Comedy Central's Jon Stewart, whom he had called a bigot. Sanchez explained he was tired when he made the radio appearance and that, quote, my daughter had a softball game I desperately wanted to go to and I was a little impatient. I said some things I shouldn't have said. They were wrong. Not only were they wrong, they were offensive. The next day, he was out of a job. He says he has no beef with Stewart or with CNN, although when pressed by Good Morning America anchor George Stephanopoulos, Sanchez seemed to still be chafing from ill treatment. Is that really fair? He asked. Why is it always me? He also referred to the landscape of cable news primetime hosts. There's not a single Hispanic, a single Asian American, or a single African American, he said. Sanchez was born in Cuba and has worked at CNN since 2004. He was host of the two-hour Rick's List on CNN's afternoon lineup. He's done a primetime version of that show in recent months, but lost the time slot to a new show featuring Elliot Spitzer and columnist Kathleen Parker. I'm not trying to make excuses, he said, summing up. When Stephanopoulos asked if he would ever go back to CNN if given the chance, Sanchez said, absolutely, CNN is a wonderful, wonderful organization. CNN didn't screw up. Rick Sanchez screwed up.
And did he share more observations about how the Jews are running everything? All right. Awesome. There you go. Well, that is your entertainment news, and that is your Legion of News for Friday. October 8th, 2010, right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget, Legion of News comes your way each and every weekday from noon until 1 p.m. from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor at the news desk. Executive producer Bruce Agler, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show comes up next at rickemerson.com. We will see you Monday at noon for another exciting installment of
Legion of News
on PDX.FM.